think kind of required listening for this episode of Remaster is Mac Stories Unwind. I don't know if you have episode numbers, but it
we don't have episode numbers.
Okay, it is an episode called It's All Been Leading Up to This, which was released on April 12th. I'll put a link in the show notes, but you should go check that out, where Federico tells the story of what led him to the Lenovo Legion Go, and also this like huge story about eGPUs, which I found fascinating, and it is hilarious and incredible. You should go listen to it. But one of the things that I felt missing from the episode that I wanted to maybe do as a compendium to that episode here is actually talking about, you have a Legion Go.
Yes.
What is it? Why is it good to play games on the Legion Go? Like, I would like to know more about, you know, because you talk about, as you do, which is fantastic, the way in which you get the maximum performance from this handheld. But like, I'm intrigued more about like using it instead of a Steam Deck or ROG Ally or whatever. Like, what is so good about the Lenovo Legion Go?
Right. So the first thing I will say about the Legion Go is that the screen is absolutely amazing. It is not OLED, but this is an 8.8 inches, so almost 9 inches. And it's, I believe, on a handheld and possibly even other devices, I think it's the best LCD screen I've ever seen. I don't know what Lenovo have done to tune the colors on this display, but it's so bright and vivid. And when you see those almost 9 inches in a handheld that you hold relatively close to your face, the effect is stunning. Just looking at games, even if it's not OLED, but there's such a difference that those almost two inches make between the Steam Deck, for example, and the Legion Go. It just makes everything bigger. Text is more comfortable to read. The colors are great compared to... if you're coming from an LCD Steam Deck, I think this is a way better LCD. Is it OLED quality? It's not. But the size, I think, and the color tuning that Lenovo have done, I think it's excellent.
I got to ask a quick question around that, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I've always been happy about screens going bigger. I mean, after my initial hesitation, especially around iPhones, when I used to think that 4 inches was more than enough, and now I'm thinking 6.7 inches is kind of limiting sometimes, you know? So I got to ask you, how big do you think a handheld gaming device screen can go before you'd think it'd be too much?
Yeah, I think this is approaching the limit. I would say around 9 inches is the limit for what I think would feel comfortable. There's potential here for Lenovo to shrink the bezels maybe even more, although this device has pretty slim bezels. But I do think that the threshold of 9 inches makes sense, because otherwise it really starts feeling like a tablet. And I think this is approaching that threshold for me. I think it's within the threshold of comfort at the moment. I could see something like 9.2, for example, working, or 9.1 working, but I wouldn't go to 10 inches, for example, because at that point you're basically holding an iPad, and that causes all kinds of other issues for like the height of the controllers, for example. Whereas with 8.8, we're going to talk about the controllers in a minute, I think it's still comfortable enough while offering just more display.
Yeah, because I guess like if you imagine putting controllers on the side of a 11-inch iPad, it's like that's not comfortable.
It's awkward, and then you gotta make the controllers smaller, and you end up with these weird looking devices. The folks at 1X Player, it's a company that makes handheld computers. They have recently come out with one such device. I believe it's called the 1X Player X1, maybe, but it does have the weird look, right? It's like a tablet with the smaller controllers on the sides, and it looks strange, and I think it's too big.
11 inches, and it looks like it genuinely just looks like an iPad with a split pro controller. This doesn't look very comfortable at all to use.
Exactly. So the display, I think it there's a lot of nice compromises and trade-offs here, and I think Lenovo have made the right decisions. In terms of performance, I think it's easy to think of this one as, imagine a hybrid of a Steam Deck and an ROG Ally, but made for power users. I would say the Lenovo Legion Go is the handheld for power users. So it has the same CPU and the same amount of RAM as an ROG Ally. So you have the same Z1 Extreme system on a chip by AMD. You have the same 16 gigs of RAM, but it's faster RAM. So it's considerably faster than an ROG Ally. And on these devices, especially for games that are not so well optimized for handhelds, where the CPU needs to do a lot of work, faster RAM really comes in handy. So right out the gate, you get better performance on this one, on a Legion Go, than an ROG Ally.
Oh,
and an ROG Ally...
Federico, I'm scrolling through this product page, and they have Legion glasses.
Legion glasses?
Do you know about these?
I don't know
about
those.
They're like the X-Reels.
Oh, wasn't there like a CES announcement?
Possibly.
I think it was.
Possibly.
I think it was. I am not interested in the Legion glasses.
They also have a Lenovo Legion backpack. Would you like that? Active Gaming Backpack.
I do have a backpack by JS Aux, you know, the makers of, it's a simple €40 bag that I got from Amazon. So that's what I'm using.
Right.
Surely the Lenovo backpack comes with a car battery and an eGPU connector.
RGB lights around the zipper or something. So anyway, you get better performance, but there were two more things that I want to mention. Obviously, you know me, it's got a kickstand. This device has a built-in kickstand. I believe it's as good, if not better, than the Nintendo Switch OLED kickstand. It feels sturdy, lots of viewing angles, and I've just been loving the ability to place it on my desk and play it like that, or put it on my lap, or just even extending the kickstand when I'm holding the device in my hands, because I feel like it creates a better weight distribution. I don't know. I've been using the kickstand a lot. And two USB 4 ports. Now, this is a major departure from literally every other handheld. And especially, I was using the ROG Ally before. The ROG Ally has a USB-C port, but they're using a proprietary connector for eGPUs. Whereas with the Legion Go, you have two standard USB 4 ports. And USB 4 is still kind of pretty much like a rare thing still these days. It's backwards compatible with Thunderbolt 3 and 4. So you can use any Thunderbolt-enabled eGPU. Mm-hmm. But you can also use USB 4 native eGPU, which is still kind of difficult to find. But in terms of future-proofing this device, that will allow you to have much better bandwidth than Thunderbolt 4. And it also means you can connect multiple things at the same time. So yeah, if you want to charge and connect something else, or charge and connect USB-C earbuds or headphones, you can do that.
The two USB-C port, or USB 4 port, whatever, that is, I think, for me, the key characteristic of you saying this is for pro gamers.
Exactly.
Right? Real gamers, I guess, because real you gamers. Can plug in things like an eGPU, which is it's a super weird and niche thing to do. To a handheld device for a bunch of reasons, even though it's great. But it to me feels like that is a very key component of making this a real gamers only handheld.
Yeah. And obviously it's got detachable controllers like a Nintendo Switch. You can detach both, basically like Joy-Cons, mm-hmm. except the one on the right has a little trackpad like a Steam Deck, just on the right, which you can use to interact with Windows and click and select stuff. And they have, because it's a real gamer device, they have a bunch of programmable back paddles and buttons that you can... I never use them, except for one that I use all the time for screenshots.
That's a good idea.
I only use the one key combination for screenshots, but I haven't programmed any of the other back buttons. But they are detachable, which is great because you can, for example, like I said, put this on your lap or put this on your desk, detach the controllers and play like a Nintendo Switch. I got a very cheap $10 thing from Amazon that lets me put the Joy-Cons in a standard controller configuration, like the Nintendo Switch accessory, and it's great. So yeah, that's I was interested in this handheld primarily because I wanted to get better performance than an ROG Ally, but also in thinking more about like eGPUs and future-proofing my setup, you know, thinking ahead over the next few years with the arrival of USB 4. I wanted to have the most flexible option for me. I should also note that because of I'm loving this so much and I've sort of consolidated all of my non-Nintendo and non-PlayStation usage around this device, I'm probably going to sell everything else. I've already sold a bunch of things that I'm no longer using. And I think realistically, I'm also going to sell the Steam Deck OLED and the Asus stuff that I have. Just because I mentioned this, I think, on Unwind. Using this device has given me the same sense of peace that I felt, for example, for my work when I realized that the Things app was my favorite task manager. Or like that sense of like, I've done my research, I've tried all the options, I've literally tried all the options out there, and I have finally found something that is the thing for me, and I don't want to look anymore. Like, I feel that same sense of like, this is the culmination of the research that I felt with some apps or devices before. Yeah.
Got to ask you, if I'm not mistaken, weren't you a Todoist person for a while?
Yeah, until 2 years ago. And then for a year and a half at this point, I've been using Things, and much to my surprise, I've tried something else. I haven't switched anymore. I found the thing that clicked with me after God knows how many years, and that was it.
How comfortable is this to use?
All right, so this thing is heavy. It's heavier than a Steam Deck, and you can feel it. It's 200 grams more than a Steam Deck.
Okay.
It's fine for me. I've never had, like, I got big hands. I'm used to handling relatively heavier devices than normal. If weight is a concern for you, you should try these if possible in a store or something.
Yeah, it's like, I just looked, the Steam Deck is apparently 670 grams.
Yeah, this one is 800.
Another 200 grams. Yeah. It's like, that's quite a lot. Like, that is quite a big difference.
Yeah, that is why I think, you know, they also made the detachable controllers and the kickstand. So you can have more options if you start feeling the weight on your hands and wrists, which I think is a smart decision. I'm fine with it, and I find the size of the controllers, like just using it in handheld mode, more comfortable for me than an ROG Ally because it's bigger and my hands, like, they get crampy when I'm using smaller devices like Nintendo Switch. So yeah, I prefer it to other handhelds, but the weight is a consideration that you should think about seriously if you want to get one of these.
But so, like, do you play it in handheld, like, do you play with most the controllers of the attached?
Time. Most of the time, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I mostly play with it in bed or on the couch.
Okay.
When I play in front of my TV with the eGPU, I detach the controllers and I pop the thing up with a nice with the kickstand, and that's the only. Usually, I play in handheld mode, just holding it in front of my face. Yeah.
So one of the key differences between this and the Steam Deck is it runs Windows.
Yes, yes.
So you can play everything on it?
Everything. I mean, it's standard Windows 11, so you can put Steam, you can put Epic Game Store, Xbox, Game Pass. It's Windows, so whatever. Any emulator you want. A lot of people don't like Windows for gaming, and rightfully so. It's not optimized like SteamOS. Right, which is why we talked about this before. Why Microsoft may be thinking about an optimized version of Windows or the Xbox operating system for handhelds. I kind of love the freedom that Windows gives you because, like, you want to mod a game, You can just go for it. You don't need to jump through the hoops of Linux on the Steam Deck.
To me, it's like the fact that you can play Game Pass for Windows install the games. Like, that is a killer feature that I wished it was somehow available on Steam Deck. I just wish that I could do that.
It comes with its own caveats, right? So, you got to install drivers and you got to run software updates, and it's not as streamlined as a Steam Deck. So you got to keep that in mind. But if you've been playing games on PC, you're likely already used to all that sort of stuff. And in return, you get the freedom to use whatever you want. You're not locked into a single ecosystem. You can just... for example, I've been playing Like a Dragon on the Xbox app, and I've been playing Dragon's Dogma on Steam, and it's no problem, because it's Windows. Yeah. So I think Lenovo has done a better job than Asus, for example, or God forbid, Aya Neo, when it comes to the overlay, the custom overlays that you get on the Legion Go. It's called the Legion Space UI. You have a performance monitor that lets you choose the TDP that you want to use, for example, lets you adjust the fan curves and all that sort of stuff. And there's also a games launcher. And I think they have a pretty minimal UI, especially for the games launcher. It's pretty simple. It scans your system for games, and you just press the left button on your Legion Go, and it takes you into the Legion Space UI. So if you don't want to use Windows, you have that overlay. And I think it's a nicer looking overlay, both for the games launcher and for the performance overlay, than the Asus one. I hated the Armory Crate UI on the ROG Ally. It was so slow to use and bloated. And the Legion Space one, it's very streamlined. I think they've done a nice job.
Touchscreen?
Touchscreen, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Is that how you would move the mouse?
You also have a trackpad on the right Joy-Con controller.
How does that feel?
It's small, but you can use it with your thumb, and you can I was surprised because you can still click and double click stuff. So it responds to clicks. So if you need to do the occasional file management stuff, or use a web browser, it's serviceable. Like, I've seen tons of people actually use an external mouse and keyboard, which is more comfortable. But if you are in a pinch and you need to download the driver or something, or run a software update, or install a Skyrim mod, for example, you can use it. It's fine.
Yeah, the extra screen size helps, I guess.
Isn't there a thing you can do with one of the Joy-Cons where you can move it around on the desk like a mouse?
I haven't done it.
You can do this. I remember seeing this in Austin Evans' video.
You can do this. They have an IR thing, I believe. Yeah.
And you can kind of hold it vertically and move it around, and it moves the mouse cursor. So it's a vertical mouse.
I have never done it, but thank you for reminding me, because I totally forgot that it was a thing. And it's got a headphone jack. So there's also, it's got that going for it, because it's a real gamer device.
For real gamers.
And apparently Lenovo has found success with this Legion Go, because they're working on a second one, they said. So they're continuing to update the software with updates. They released a very nice update last week, so that now you can reprogram every single back button to do whatever you want. They're apparently going to do a second Legion Go. And I think it's interesting, Lenovo. So obviously I've been keeping an eye on this entire handheld market. And when it comes to graphics cards, one of the interesting stories that is sort of developing right now is this sort of upcoming battle between three different standards for eGPUs.
Hooray. This is what we want. Blu-ray and HD DVD all over again.
This is like the XKCD Comic-Con standards.
Yeah.
So there's USB 4, There's the upcoming Thunderbolt 5, which the first controllers for PCs should be available by Intel in 2025. So there's USB 4, Thunderbolt 5, and this new standard called Oculink, which promises even like higher bandwidth than USB 4. And it's interesting because Oculink is natively supported already on a bunch of 1X player devices, like the 1X GPU that I have, for example, as an Oculink port. But Lenovo itself, they're making a laptop with a native Oculink port that they announced at CES. So I am keen to see if maybe a Lenovo Legion Go 2 as in the future as a native Oculink port in addition to USB 4. So this entire scene is kind of interesting. And of course, we're all just, you know, even in Apple land, we're waiting for the arrival of Thunderbolt 5. So we'll see what's going to happen there. Ultimately, this is at the moment, this is the dream handheld for me. And it allows me to play video games the way I want to play them more, which we're going to talk about later. It's heavy, which is fine for me. It's comfortable with the controllers, excellent performance, tons of flexibility for USB accessories, which is what I love. And now I got to sell a bunch of old stuff.
So weird question, but with the Steam Deck, you got this really cheap kind of dock for it. Does this thing come with a dock?
No, it doesn't come with the dock, but you can just buy any
sort of... Just use a kickstand, right?
It's got a kickstand,
but... And then you just use a hub with a USB.
Exactly. You can just use it. You can use any hub with USB, like one of those anchor hubs that has USB and HDMI. You can just use that and plug it into a TV or a monitor or something. Do whatever you want, because like at the end of the day, it's just USB. So any USB accessory will work. Or Thunderbolt accessory, because USB 4 is backwards compatible with Thunderbolt.
Oh, I didn't know that. So what's the maximum, excuse the geeky question, what's the maximum bandwidth of USB 4?
So a USB 4 at the moment, if you have a native USB 4 eGPU, which I'm thinking about, we'll see, you get 64 gigabit per second.
Wow.
As opposed to the
that
40.
That is insane.
As opposed to the 40 gigabit per second.
Oh,
it's so hilarious to me. It's funny that Shahir would even ask. It's even funnier that Federico just knows the answer to that question. Well, you two are some friggin' nerds, man.
We are. But these things matter. I mean, there's method behind our madness, right?
Oh, so I have no doubt that the result is fantastic. But like,
yeah,
I don't even really know what it means.
He needs to know that he's going to get the results he's going to get. So he'll know the numbers. Mm-hmm. I want to know if this is going to be good enough to do dev on the move. Because then I'll just sling one of these in a bag and go to some cafe and do some dev with an external 40-key keyboard and mouse, you know, and just for the kick.
Yeah.
All right, this episode is brought to you by Porkbun.com, the number one domain name registrar, as named by USA Today for 2023 and 2024. Porkbun offers low prices on domains like .quest, .gg, .games, and more for you real gamers. They also offer powerful web hosting solutions, email hosting, and a LinkedIn bio tool, which we all need for our social media. Plus, every domain name from Porkbun comes with a ton of freebies like SSL certificates, whois privacy, URL forwarding, web and email hosting trials, and so much more, because the folks over at Porkbun don't believe you should have to pay for things. It should be for free. That's what you love with Porkbun. They're giving you all this stuff. You should just be able to get this with your domains, and Porkbun believes so. And you'll be backed by personalized five-star support 365 days a year. Their support team is based in the US, and you get to deal with real people, not an automated system. Plus, Porkbun has a simple user interface. You can manage everything about your new domain all from one place. Right now, Remaster listeners can get $1 off their next domain name from Porkbun when they visit porkbun.com/remaster Remaster24. You can also click the link in our show notes or use the code Remaster24 at checkout. That is porkbun.com/Remaster24 to grab the domain name you want and start sharing your passion today. Our thanks to porkbun.com for their support of this show and Relay FM. Boys, I got a little thing today. I'm probably going to have more to say on this in future episodes.
Okay. But
there is something called the Nemesis system.
What is this? This is the first time in my life that I'm hearing this sentence.
I have been hearing about the Nemesis system for a while on some gaming podcasts that I listen to, and it came up recently because there is a Wonder Woman game in development, and they are going to be using the Nemesis system. The Nemesis system is a really innovative and interesting way of handling enemy AI. And when it came about, it was quite revolutionary. It's actually quite difficult to do research about this online because of what I'm about to get into in a minute. But two of the games that really focused quite heavily on a Nemesis system were two Lord of the Ring games, one called Shadow of Mordor in 2014, and the follow-up Shadow of War in 2017.
Okay.
These games are pretty well known for this.
Yes. Now,
and it was like people really loved it, and it was like, wow, like this is super cool. The thing about the Nemesis system is it was patented by Warner Brothers, who created
patented?
It. Yes. Okay. Warner Brothers have a patent on this, which is like, you think that sounds weird, but it's like that thing. Do you remember the patent on like games that you could play while waiting for a loading screen?
Yeah.
So it's like that kind of idea. So, and the Wonder Woman game is being developed by Warner Brothers. So let me give you the idea of the Nemesis system as I've been playing, because I wanted to try it out, because it's like I've always heard about this thing and people talk about it being like really transformative and like an incredible way of dealing with enemy AI and stuff. So I was like, I tried Shadow of Mordor. That game's too old. It's 2014. It feels too old. Shadow of War from 2017, massive improvement. Like it feels much more modern. So I've been playing some Shadow of War. Essentially, in Shadow of War, it's like an open world game where you have quests, but there are like enemy goblins and orcs all over the map. And you can get into fighting with them if you want to, right? Like they're all about and they're doing whatever. And there are different missions you can do. Sometimes you can just like go invade a camp and like take over a camp or whatever. But in the enemies, there are ranks of enemies. And some are like captains, and then you've got like the chief overseeing the captains, and it is like a system that you can look at in a menu to be like, show me the ranks in this area that I'm in. And some of them will be highlighted for you and some of them are blacked out, and you can discover who the captains are by interrogating some people, some enemies you find on the map. You have a system of interrogating them. That means you can uncover the identity of one of the captains. And like the idea, like that, you know, you can kind of like take down a whole system of this like area by like taking out the captains and then taking out the boss, right? But there are these other parts to the Nemesis system. So one, the captains, they have their own strengths and weaknesses, which you can also find out what these strengths and weaknesses are by interrogating the, you know, sort of lower level orcs. The strengths and weaknesses change for these particular people as you're fighting them. So if you fight one of these guys, the way your fighting style, if it takes you a long time to beat him and you keep doing the same kind of move, he learns about you and adapts his fighting style and it turns into a strength. So if this guy gets away from you, the next time that you fight him, he's going to be harder. And that is a thing. So you bump into these captains, right? Or you attack, you go for these captains. You can have fights with them, but sometimes they're like, you know what? Forget this. And they run. And they're running. You can try and chase them. Sometimes they get away from you. And then they've learned about you. So the next time you come around, they remember you. And they're like, haha, I got away from you last time. They actually say this to you. I got away from you last time and I've learned. And now I'm going to kill you, right? So there's like the AI kind of learns a little bit. Or sometimes if one of them beats you, right, like in battle, and like you go back to a save, or you go back to like one of these towers in the game where you kind of like, you know, like it's where you die, you come back and you continue. The next time you come, it's like, I killed you before, You're somehow back to life. I've learned I'm going to kill you again. And if they kill you, they level up. And like, you can do all these, like, they remember stuff about you. They adapt to you and it can change their kind of standing. Also, sometimes they'll be like, oh, like, here's some information you need to know. This orc captain killed another orc captain and he took over this little territory. So now he's more of a threat. You can also send death threats to these guys through lower level orcs. And it, so then like you can say, oh, I'm coming to get you. I'm going to kill you. And they gain in level. They become more difficult, therefore making them harder to beat and giving you higher rewards. Basically, there are all these little systems and it's all about the Nemesis system is essentially like it's a memory that the villains have in the game. It's like they're aware of you more. They know they fought you before. Or they've learned about you, or like there's more of like an interaction that you're having. So it makes this vastly more interesting than just mindlessly fighting hordes of enemies in an open world, because like there's this whole system that's building, and you can choose to take it down if you want to. But like that, it's just fascinating. It's like a really interesting thing. And at the time, people were like blown away by it, because it's like, we never played something like this before. And it was so good that Warner Brothers were like, yep, we'll patent it. So it's not been in many games. So like it coming for this potential Wonder Woman game in the next couple of years could be really interesting, because we haven't had like a quote unquote modern game. I don't think there has been a Nemesis system game since 2017. So that's the Nemesis system. So I'm playing this Lord of the Ring game mostly to experience this. And so that's my weird thing that I've got for you this month that I've been trying out.
This sounds incredible. Like, and I'm so surprised that I never heard of it before. But like,
I think it's because like if you haven't played these two Lord of the Ring games, you wouldn't have come across it.
I was familiar with like Shadow of War. Yeah. Like I remember the game, but just like this entire feature of it, like that sounds great. Speaking of things that I never heard before until a couple of weeks ago, I've been playing Dragon's Dogma 2. And I feel pretty confident saying that at the moment, this is my game of the year.
Okay.
And it is one of the, it is the kind of game that is making me feel the same things that I last felt with Breath of the Wild and Elden Ring. And that's because they have this expression on the Into the Aether video game podcast, excellent show, that like Dragon's Dogma 2 is like a third pillar of the open world genre in addition to Breath of the Wild and Elden Ring, and it totally feels like that. So let me contextualize. Dragon's Dogma 2, made by Capcom, follow up to the original Dragon's Dogma that came out in the Xbox 360 era, and later was ported to the Nintendo Switch with an expanded version. I never paid attention to the first Dragon's Dogma, and then by doing some reading online, I learned that it sort of became this like niche cult game that a bunch of people really are into, and most people find too difficult or strange or weird to get into. Dragon's Dogma 2, available cross-platform, made with the RE4 engine, so great graphics, great performance. Well, we'll talk about the performance in a little bit. It depends. But it does look beautiful if your system can afford it. And it's an action RPG at a high level. It's an action RPG where you control a main character that gets assisted by a bunch of CPU-controlled side characters. It's not like a Final Fantasy. The fights play out in real time. You get to choose between different classes. Each class has a different set of abilities. Some of those abilities you can equip to your main character, and they carry around sort of, even if you try a different class, you can equip one of those core abilities with you. And it's set in this fantasy sort of Middle Ages looking world. And it's an open world game. Like that's the basic description. The thing about this game is that it does so many unique things that I have never seen done in a video game before. So let me explain. First, there's the common misconception that Capcom has done an Elden Ring here. Because if you just take a look at the screenshots and some of the videos, it looks like Elden Ring. It does not feel like Elden Ring at all.
Okay.
It's much like the combat is very different. Like it's not From Software games combat. It's more, it's easier and it's more based around the idea of abilities and using your abilities rather than parrying and countering and dodging enemy attacks. It's very different. And the atmosphere in general is much, much lighter than Elden Ring. In fact, I would say this game is quite funny in places.
Right.
Whereas you wouldn't say such a thing about Elden Ring.
It's very dark and like very it puts dark. Me off.
It's a whole vibe which I totally got into during the pandemic, but it's not a game for everybody. This game, you are the Arisen. The Arisen is this mythical character in this fictional world that is the only person who can defeat the dragon. The dragon that sort of plagues this world, that routinely destroys villages and towns, and you are the Arisen. You are this special character because the dragon sort of chose you as the only human or Bistran character who can fight the dragon. And the dragon did that by literally ripping the heart out of your chest, and somehow you resurrected, therefore why you are called the Arisen. And in this fictional world, the Arisen gets to be called the Sovereign of the world. The dragon chose you, and therefore you are meant to represent the people as well. And that's the thing about the Arisen. Now, the Arisen also has other perks in addition to becoming the Sovereign and, you know, sort of having these special powers to fight the dragon. You can also control these side characters called pawns. Now, this is the core mechanic of Dragon's Dogma. These pawns are side characters that have the special ability to travel the rift, this sort of limbo world in between worlds. Now, these pawns, as you start the game, most of them are made by Capcom. They're like default side characters. Yep. One is a thief, one is an archer, one is a mage, and so forth. They travel with you. They chat a lot. Like, they're very talkative. And Capcom has sort of embraced the memes, I have understood, from the first games. The dialogue is very funny. And these pawns, they love to chat. And you can impart very basic orders like follow me, go there, attack, help me, and so forth. As you progress in the game, the pawns that you can unlock are characters made by other people playing Dragon's Dogma. So you get that sort of like asynchronous multiplayer that is kind of reminiscent of Elden Ring, but in a different way. So you can hire these pawns. You can dismiss one of the pawns that you have, get a second one. To do that, you got to use some points. And these are the characters made by a person, like a real human playing Dragon's Dogma, that had their pawn uploaded to the Rift and that you can hire in your own game. And they're funny. Like, the character creation tool of this game is incredible, really well done. And some of these pawns, like, I got one called Gandhi with a Y. Not like Gandhi, from India, but like Gandalf from Lord of the Rings, and the nickname of the pawn was Ian, like Ian McKellen.
Oh, that's good.
The actor.
That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, yeah. So and he totally looked like Gandalf. But the thing, so that's how the pawn system works. I think it's really well done. You can also make your main pawn available for hire. And you can send the pawn off to other worlds. And then when he comes back, they'll tell you, my master in the other world really liked me, and so forth. The thing about this game, though, is how it deals with the open world. It's a massive world that almost doesn't tell you anything about it. And from that point of view, that's why I brought up the analogy with Breath of the Wild and Elden Ring. Forget about the Ubisoft style of open world. Forget about the Horizon style of open world. You got to figure this stuff out on your own. And the way that this game lends itself so well to this like serendipitous discovery of stuff, I know that I've done this. I got lost sort of like making my own decisions about how to reach a specific town or how to sort of explore an area. And I suddenly, it was like 5 hours and I hadn't completed the main quest, but I had unlocked so many cool things in the meantime. I felt the last time I truly felt this way was maybe with Breath of the Wild. Elden Ring hit me in a different way, because of the mood and the vibe and the difficulty and the fighting system. But this sense of exploration that at the moment is so unlike, for example, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, that game with its constant, you know, nagging of, hey, do this side quest and putting like dozens of indicators on your map at the expense of like that sense of discovery and that sense of exploration, that sense of like, how am I supposed to do this with no instructions from the game? And I think the reason why this game is resonating with me so much, I'm about 35 hours into the game so far, is exactly that. Like rewarding the creativity of the player and respecting the player by having a series of small decisions when it comes to exploring the world and dealing with side quests. And your approach to those side quests, I think it's so well done. But at the same time, it's not for everybody because it requires a certain level of commitment. Some of the menus, for example, are kind of hard to navigate. Using the map is kind of awkward. If you don't have a PC well-specced enough to run this game, it can look like crap. but it's so refreshing to play this sort of open world game. I highly recommend checking. You don't need to play the first Dragon's Dogma. The story is right. Totally separate and actually a very interesting story. But if you think you are into this sort of aesthetic, so like middle age, medieval sort of setting, fantasy world, action RPG, that is quite funny in a lot of places. And if you are into customizing your character, and trying different classes, and that sense of exploration that maybe you last felt 7 years ago with Breath of the Wild on the Switch, you should get this one.
Can I take you back to the pawns?
Yes.
So let's say you create one that's very popular. The player that creates popular pawns, do they get any benefit for that?
Yes, you do. So you get likes from the
likes
people.
And subscribes.
No. You get hearts and thumbs up. So that gives you a general sense if like your pawn is actually working for them. But you can also get items in return, money, like fictional gold from the game, money in return. And also if you set specific objectives for your pawn. Like, for example, one that I'm doing at the moment is my pawn is called Dante. And Dante is supposed to... Dante is supposed to fight and kill 30 ogres in other people's worlds. And every time he kills one of them, I get a reward, like a rare item or money.
That's nice. Really cool. I like that a lot.
It's really well done. It's really well done. And Yeah,
that's exactly what I was hoping to hear.
Yeah. And all these pawns, they talk with this, I don't know, like middle age, like sounding British accent.
Sure.
Like really, really, really thick accent. It's like, Master, mayhap there's a ladder here. Like it's all like that.
Federico, that's made my day. That this is like when my wife does English accents. It's just like,
It
just doesn't sound any different. I love it. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Just Google or search. Yeah, a reason. Mayhap we could use this ladder. Yeah,
I I love it.
Yeah. My pondante likes to say, somehow he makes this sound with the letter R, that it's more like R, like this. It's like different materials result in different creations. And he says that all the time. It's this game is so funny. Trust me, it's very, very funny. Yeah. But also, like, it's scary. Like, when a griffin flies down from the sky and wants to kill you, that thing is huge. Yeah. I love this game. It's so good.
Don't you mean griffin?
It's a griffin.
It's a griffin.
Master.